Good afternoon. House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Let's see. How about we'll pick on Representative Nornes today. Representative Nornes, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from March 23rd?
Madam Chair, I just did.
Thank you. And if you would move adoption of those minutes?
I'll move the minutes from March the 23rd.
All right. Madam Any Chair. Questions or comments from members on the March 23rd minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes for March 23rd, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Nope. Minutes are adopted. Thank you very much.
How are you?
All right. So today, members, we are going to be hearing, as we talked about yesterday, several bonding proposals, and these are proposals that touch some touch education in some way. And so they were referred from capital investment or referred to our committee. And then at some point, we can choose to make a recommendation or not of those to refer on to the Capital Investment Committee. So we're going to hear them. And I think we've invited basically anyone who we put out a notice to anybody with a bonding proposal to have the opportunity to be heard today. So they're all in your packets. I will note just Representative Sundin, we didn't hear back specifically if he wanted to have his bill heard today. It's in your packets in case. So we did make contact, so I'm not sure if he's going to come and want to present his bill, but the information is there. And Jody or Mr. Withers has organized this, so we're just going to kind of go in order in which bill sponsors showed up today. So Representative Hancock. And Representative Hancock comes down. You have two proposals, so we'll hear one and then the other. So I'm assuming, Representative Hancock, that we're going to hear House File 1806, which is for the Red Lake School first. Is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, that would be correct.
All right. So I will go ahead and move your bill to get it in front of us, and then it's also my understanding that you have an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape you would like. Is that correct?
That I do, Madam Chair. It's a amendment A160911, which is basically a delete all amendment.
Very well. So members, in your packets in the House File 1806, there is an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. It's the A16-0911 amendment. And Representative Hancock, do you want to briefly describe the amendment for us?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, what this is it's a bonding request that was part of a three-tier priority for the Red Lake Schools. And in consultation with them, I asked them to prioritize it, and they set this priority as their number one priority and came back with some new figures and a little bit of an adjustment as to what was taking place. And that is what we would be presenting today, would be the current needs and proposal from the Red Lake School District.
All right, very well. So I will move House File 1806. And the bill is to be referred to the Capital Investment Committee, but today my intention is to lay it over. And right now, the question before us is the author's amendment, the A16 amendment. Any questions from members on that? All right, seeing none, all in favor of the A16 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, and the amendment has been adopted. So now the bill is in the shape that the author would like. And Representative Hancock, if you want to just go ahead and formally introduce yourself and provide your testimony.
Well, thank you. I'm Representative Dave Hancock, representing 2A, which includes the Red Lake Nation. And I'm happy to and honored to represent them. What you have before you is a proposal for the Red Lake Elementary School and Early Childhood Learning Center. I won't go through all the specifics. I know you have a lot of bills on your plate today, but it basically not only does some remodeling in connection with the Early Development Center and the elementary school, but it upgrades the availability to have audiovisual and computer labs and so on updated and expanded in the cafeteria, and really then If you look at some of the pictures that are present in the presentation, and I'm sorry they're not in color, but you can get a good idea of the crowding and the necessity of expansion of the facilities here. First of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to present to the Education Committee. I taught school back in the 68-69, and this is the first time I think I've been not set on any of the committees, the first time I've had a chance to present to them. And I think you would both agree, or most of you would agree, that education is the vehicle of opportunity. And is that more so than within our native community. And I think education is the one thing that we can help provide with the native community that will not only expand their opportunity within their Red Leg Nation, but also within the greater world community. And with me today, I just wanted to read the one sort of mission statement of the Red Lake Public Schools, and it says, where students are empowered to become Red Lake Nation ambassadors. And I have with me today, if the chair and the committee would like to hear, the ambassador from Red Lake, Tony Stilday. And then if we need to get into the nuts and bolts and the dollar figures of it, I have Mr. Larson, affectionately known as Willie, for the number of years, and he can answer those questions for you. So I'd be happy to entertain any questions you might have, or I would rather have these two fine people do the talking.
Thank you, Representative Hancock. We appreciate that framing up of the request and the bill before us. And Ms. Stilday, do you want to lead off testimony, or whoever wants to lead off is fine. Just please introduce yourself for the record, and we look forward to your testimony.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Willie Larson. I'm the business manager for the Red Lake School District. We are way up north, north of Bemidji, closer to the Canadian border than anything. We serve about 1,490 students, grades K or pre-K 12. 99% of our student population is our Native American, specifically Red Lake.
All right, thank you. Ms. Stilday.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm honored and pleased to be here. I just want to say that I'm here in support of Independent School District number 38 and on behalf of Red Lake, and just appreciate your looking over this request. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you say your name for us once for the record?
I'm sorry. Excuse me. My name is Tony Stilday. I'm the ambassador for the Red Lake Nation.
Thank you. Thank you. We need that for the tape. All right. Thank you very much. Questions from committee members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to our committee. Probably to the business manager. Do you receive any federal dollars to help with education? I know you're not a BIE school, but do you receive grants, or do you receive anything for instructional purposes, and do you receive any dollars in grants for capital investment?
Mr. Larson.
Madam Chair and committee members, our district receives federal education funding like through Title I, Title II, those kind of programs. We also receive some impact aid, which is under a public law that is directed specifically for educational purposes within the school as well. Yes.
And Madam Chair,
Representative,
and sir, nothing though for capital improvements, correct?
The capital improvement dollars that we received last year were about $179,000.
From the federal government?
That's correct.
Bureau of Indian Affairs?
No, or from the Department of
Department
Education.
Department of Ed. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions from committee members? I had a question, and to either Mr. Larson or Ms. Stilday, whoever wanted to answer. I was just looking through the materials that you provided, and clearly you've got some crowding issues going on and others going on in the school. How are you increasing enrollment in the Red Lake School District?
Madam Chair, yes, we are increasing. We're very proud of the fact that we've been increasing. We sat at about 1,400 students for, I'd say, about 5 or 6 years.
And 2 years ago, we had a kindergarten class that went from 130 to almost 200. And now they're matriculating up through, and we've had to actually, this next school year, we'll be increasing a grade 3 and a grade 5 section, which means that we've also had to reduce some special education areas because we needed the regular education classroom areas. In order to accommodate some of the crowding issues that we've had to put classrooms onto a stage area, building a makeshift classroom for them. Next year, we're actually going to eliminate a computer lab to allow for another classroom to be put into place.
And thank you, Mr. Larson. Do you foresee that enrollment continuing to grow, or do you think that was kind of a one-time blip? And sometimes that happens in schools where you just happen to get a very large class that moves through.
Madam Chairman, it's always hard to tell because we can tell 5 years. You know, look at 5 years would be our grade zero or ages. But basically what we're seeing is there's a movement to come back to the reservation. And we're finding that we're getting a lot of new families that are coming onto the reservation. So right now we are anticipating our kindergarten class next year to be between 165 and 170.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Van Zyls.
Members, if you were ever able to visit the reservation, you would know the need immediately. And obviously, the fact that this is Indian Trust Land, a reservation, there's next to no private land ownership. This is a no tax base situation. I really want to thank Representative Hancock for bringing this. This has been around for a while in one way or another, and we need to do this. And keep in mind that on a reservation, the land is owned collectively by tribal members. And consequently, there is a very little opportunity for expanded property tax base. So this is a good bill, and it should be supported.
Thank you, Representative Van Zyls. Other questions? All right. Thank you to the testifiers. Representative Hancock, any final comments before we finish this first bill?
Only that I thank you for the opportunity of presenting this, and I would agree with Representative Van Zyls. It's a beautiful place. They've made beautiful strides in I know we've been working on the cafeteria and some other things at the high school, and they make good use of the money that is provided, and we would encourage your participation this year.
Thank you very much. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 1806, as amended, be referred to the Capital Investment Committee, but the Chair's intention today is to lay it over. And with that, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Larson and Ms. Stilday. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
All right. And Representative Hancock, since you're up there, we'll go ahead and consider your next bill. Members, that's House File 3162 in your packets. Right, and do you have an amendment with this one, Representative Hancock?
Madam Chair, no. This is the bill.
All right, so I will move House File 3162 be re-referred to Capital Investment, but the Chair's intention today is to lay the bill over. And with that, welcome back, Representative Hancock.
Thank you, and again, thank you for the opportunity to present another, what I consider sort of a unique position here. We're looking at a school that was built in 1965, some remodeling in 1984. It's a single room school that exists on 15 acres in the Angle. And it has place for the teacher when she snowmobiles or dog sleds in to live there for a bit. And it's unique in that you it's provided for K through 6 education. Students from the Angle then are transported by bus to the War Road School District, which is the school district that is in charge of the Angle School, which is well over an hour trip, and it crosses the border twice. So these buses and kids actually go through customs 4 times in a given school day. If I can digress just a bit, my first 5 years in school, back before some of your times, were in a one-room country schoolhouse. And they talk about increasing the plumbing opportunities here at the school and making them ADA accessible. Well, I remember the school that I went to had 2 paths out the back door. And we were fortunate in that we were able to replace the potbelly coal stove with a fuel oil stove, and I think we had 18 students in our best year. Not that those days we want to return to, certainly here, but I will say that a one-room country schoolhouse has its advantages in terms of peer help and in terms of just socialization with people of different ages. So they're asking for $700,000 basically to expand their opportunities. It does provide more than just a school. It provides a community shelter. It provides a community place of gathering. And it also serves as a magnet, as in a lot of smaller communities, the church and the school in those areas are really unique to that location. The fact that it is so far from the War Road School District means, from my standpoint, that we really need to do with our younger children, and they're looking to expand the early childhood family education opportunities there as well. I think we need to upgrade it and for the 12 to 18 to 20 or fluctuating enrollment, I think it's very important. And so I would ask for your consideration, and I don't have any testifiers that came down from War Road today for 5 minutes of opportunity. I do have videos and various recordings and letters from them that would support their request, but
all right, thank you.
I guess
you.
For that, I'll shut up.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hancock. And I just got an email myself about this request today. We'll go to questions now, committee members. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I can relate to your experiences, too. I started in a one-room schoolhouse next to our dairy farm down in Rice County, and 6 grades, 1 teacher, and then we consolidated with a 2-room schoolhouse just down the road. So, yeah, and we had the paths out the doors too. So, outdoor biffies. So, and I wouldn't trade those first 6 years for anything. So.
Other questions from committee members? Oh, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last summer there was a feature story in the Star Tribune about the school and its teacher. She's getting close to retirement, so I'm wondering what's going to happen when she chooses to retire. Anyway, the reason the school continues to exist is because of the resort and fishing community, and that's why we have this little Angle Inlet School. And I'm sure in years past we would have found many more of those in those kind of remote fishing and angling areas, and resort areas. So this is just a really interesting school because it's the only one we have left for one room. And, they need a few upgrades, I see. And it would be good for these students to be able to enjoy that and move on. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Hancock, just a question kind of along the lines of where Representative Erickson opened her remarks. Do you know if the current teacher if she has plans to retire, if there's been discussion about how they would find another teacher, and also wondering if they have internet access at the school.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I can't definitively answer either question. I do not know. I would suspect that the community will, with open arms, welcome a teacher that would love to go there. I think you would have to be sort of a certain breed,
yep.
so to speak, to be able to appreciate that. But as Representative Detmer and I think Representative Erickson have both indicated, that experience in talking to the kids and the parents and the teachers that have been up there is a unique experience that is highly treasured.
Thank you. Well, undoubtedly, certainly unique, and it's kind of nice to know that these little things still exist.
Madam Chair, maybe in my next life I'll go there.
Okay. You can go back to reports you maybe have recruited, Representative.
Well, I think Representative Murphy and I should talk about it.
We're
both older teachers, retired teachers. We maybe should take turns.
Very well.
So give them some help in case she retires.
Other questions? All right. Seeing none, thank you, Representative Hancock. I would renew my motion that House File 3162 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment, but today it's my intention to lay the bill over. And I thank you very much for both bill presentations today. Thank you, Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right. So, Representative Johnson, you are here. Members, Representative Johnson's bill in our packets is House File 2645. All right. Well, welcome, Representative Johnson, and you've got a couple of testifiers with you. Excuse me. I will go ahead and move your bill to have it formally before us, and then please, if each of you would state your names for the record before you present your testimony. I would move that House File 2645 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment, but the Chair's intention today is to lay the bill over, and welcome, Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, it's a pleasure to be here today. Today we're talking about the East Central Regional Library, which covers six counties, at least 15, if not more, school districts, quite a few townships, and it's very much a part of East Central Minnesota. City of Cambridge is looking at building a new facility for the library. The current facility was is coming up on twice the age of the Metrodome, which is no longer here. It was actually built before, the original building was built before I was born. And when I was in high school, I thought the building was old at that time. The current facility does have some issues. If you look in your packet, you can see what the parking is. It's only on-street parking. And there's a funeral home across the street, and when there is funerals, there is no parking for people to use the library. There's also issues in the basement where it's debatable whether or not it's even ADA compliant. Today I have two testifiers. It's Linda Wolf, the city administrator for the city of Cambridge, and Barbara Misselt, the director of East Central Regional Library, and I'll turn it over to them for the bill.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Linda Wolf, and I am the city administrator for the city of Cambridge. I'd like to talk to you today about our request for our libraries. I think, as we know, libraries are the cornerstone of our communities. They are the one place that everyone is welcome, regardless of age, income, or economic status, and charged nothing for the service. Libraries provide free educational program and services that help reduce the achievement gap and prepare all children for lifelong love of learning. Libraries are evolving to remain relevant in today's electronic society, and the Cambridge Public Library is no different. You'll see a picture of our current 18,000 square foot building. Please note the two blue parallel parking spaces for handicap. Those are the only two handicap spaces that we have to serve that entire library. Our proposed new East Central Regional Library headquarters and public library would be 36,000 square feet. So we'd like to double the size of our library to serve our constituents. Our project costs are estimated at $8 million. The Cambridge Friends of the Library is striving to raise $1 million for this project. Their fundraising efforts just began this week, and we had our first donation of $45,000 if our project gets approved. 20% of the activities of the entire East Central Regional Library are done at the Cambridge Library. They have over 100,000 patrons and visitors came to the Cambridge Library in 2014. That is an average of 36 people per hour. There's numerous books, music, movies checked out at the public library. Probably your primary question is, why is the City of Cambridge even requesting bonding dollars for this project? We're requesting bonding dollars because the function of this building serves six counties, three cities, 10 townships. Cambridge is in the unfortunate position of having an extremely high tax rate. We have the highest tax rate among all cities between the population of 5,000 and 10,000 in the state of Minnesota. This high tax burden is primarily due to road and bridge construction projects. Since 2000, the city has had to reconstruct 19 miles of city streets and one bridge at the cost of $45 million. So we have some very hefty debt service to pay for these street projects. It's very expensive, but unfortunately it's necessary that we maintain our existing infrastructure. We've also been required to build a new water treatment plant to meet radium water quality standards, and recently upgrade our wastewater treatment plant to meet the new phosphorus standards. The residents of Cambridge desperately need bonding money to reduce the financial burden that will result from the library that will serve so many jurisdictions. Now I turn it over to...
Welcome. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Mistel. I'm Director of East Central Regional Library. As we've said, this building has been in existence for almost 60 years. It is totally unable to provide the kind of modern library service that the citizens deserve to serve as a community hub. And to provide the technology, we've got it kind of stuck in corners all over. It's built on a city street. It's very difficult for not only our senior citizens to access, as we've told you. I always shudder when there's only two parallel parking places, and I can't parallel park, and neither can a lot of other people. And then so there will be two people parked there, and then the Heartland Express bus comes bringing more people, but they have to park in front of where the two people are parked, and then they all have to go around those cars to get to the handicap ramp to get into the building. On days when we have story time, we'll have anywhere from 25 to 50 small children coming to our marvelous preschool story time, and the moms are walking up the street on city parking with their strollers and things like that. It's very unsafe for them. As we said, the building also has the regional system headquarters. East Central Regional Library is the longest standing multi-county joint powers agreement providing library services. The counties are all basically don't have a lot of tax capacity to jointly build regional headquarters. The counties are Aiken, Chisago, Isani, Kennebec, Mille Lacs, and Pine. Their tax capacity is minimal. They do pay for library service, I always say the staff and the stuff, and then the buildings are provided as in Cambridge by the local cities. The East Central Regional Library allows all the branch libraries in Cambridge included in to provide cost-effective library service, and I hope you will think about funding this request from Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Questions from committee members? Representative Detmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're talking about it's a multi-county library, so none of the other counties have libraries?
Ms. Missel?
Yes. Thank you for your question. We have, in the six counties, there are 14 branch libraries. Cambridge is one of the branches. The regional headquarters is located in Cambridge, has been since the region started in 1959. We do everything centrally that we can to all the other. So at the branches, we provide the direct service. For instance, we have staff and everything to be checked out, the computers and everything. But at the regional headquarters, we do the business end of the stick, the ordering materials, the cataloging materials, the personnel things, management of the networks, things like that, so that the buildings in the individual cities, such as in Pine City, in North Branch, in the Chisago Lakes area, in Mora, those buildings are big enough to provide service, and those are provided by their local cities or counties.
Thank you. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this question is for the testifiers. I may have missed it. I'm curious, and it's kind of a twofold question. Would the new library be built on the same site as the current library, or is it intended to be an addition? What would happen to the current library if you received these funds and built the new one?
Representative Linda Wolf, City Administrator. The city has procured a new land for the library. We were unable to remodel on site without taking down business and three or four more houses. So we secured some additional land. It's an approximately an 8-acre parcel. Isani County currently owns the building, and we are working with them if the building project goes forward about maybe making this a maker space or a business incubator type building. We have seen a lot of people transition in, you know, from the townships that want to get small businesses started, but they don't have a space to grow. So conceptually, that's what we're looking for this space. It'd be a great fit because with the limited parking, you really can't put a business in there, but you can put, you know, some individual components of businesses and help them try to get started.
Representative Wells.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. I think that helps us understand the context and what you're planning to do, and I appreciate that you've put thought into repurposing the building instead of just leveling it or something like that. So thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Erickson.
Well, Madam Chair, this probably isn't a question, but I just wanted to tell everybody that 25 years of my teaching career, I was probably one of their best patrons because every time I assigned a research project, I went to the regional library headquarters in Cambridge and signed out boxes of books to bring back so my students had the best resources for research. And it was just quite amusing to see me walk out of the library in these few parking spaces and take these to my classroom in Princeton for my students to use and then have to return them so they weren't overdue.
Very good. And I'm sure they have checked to make sure that all those books have been returned.
The teacher was on that.
I do have a question, and I'm just wondering, obviously, you're working hard on raising some private funds as well for part of this project, and best of luck with that. That's great. But the total cost is about $8 million, and you're seeking $2.4 million. So where would the rest of the funds come from?
The City Council, Madam Chair, excuse me, the City Council recently approved a referendum question to go on the November 2016 ballot for this project.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Not seeing any other questions right now, so... thank you very much to the testifiers. You've done a great job, and thank you very much for the packet of information. That's always helpful. Any final comments, Representative Johnson?
I just want to thank the committee for giving us the opportunity for the city and the library to be here and for me to present this bill for you, and I'll trust your judgment as to what happens next.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2645 be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment with the Chair's intention today and lay it over. And thank you very much for being here. Let's see, Representative Howe. All right, and members, Representative Howe's bill is House File 2353, and I will go ahead and move that House File 2353 be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. The Chair's intention today is to lay the bill over, and so now it is formally before us, and Representative Howe, welcome, and we look forward to your testimony.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. It's great to be here to present another bill. And this bill provides $10 million for the library construction grants. As you well might know, these grants are a competitive grant, and they help fund the construction of new libraries and renovation of existing libraries. The libraries can apply for these grants and fund up to 50% of the cost. So the existing libraries have a skin in the game on this thing, and the maximum grant is $200,000 for improving accessibility, and it's up to $1 million for the general capital improvements if they need to add on. So, you know, I there's a lot of times I think about, geez, who uses libraries anymore? But I will tell you that in it, oh, come on now. I don't have an overdue library book, though. I know I don't have that. But anyway, I live in an area that actually everybody, it seems like, but me and my two neighbors don't have good internet access. And my daughter was taking her master's degree, and most of that was online. Well, if you don't have good internet access, you have to go someplace to get it, and she went to the library to get it because it's one of the most safest places you can go in my book. So anyway, with that, I'll turn it over to my testifier, Ms. Keefe.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Elaine Keefe, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Library Association, and we are asking your support for $10 million for library construction grants. This grant was originally established in 1994 to help public libraries become handicapped accessible. However, after a few years of this grant program, we realized that the easier projects had been done. Those libraries that needed more modest renovations to make them accessible had been dealt with. And what we were left with were buildings that really needed major renovation or outright replacement. And it didn't make sense to spend money on expensive things like elevators and handicapped restrooms for a building that was nearing the end of its lifespan. And so in 2005, the legislature broadened the program to allow grants to be used to construct new libraries and to renovate existing libraries. And I'm going to refer you to three handouts that are in your packets. This is the first one. It's the longest one. It is a handout listing all of the grants that have been made since this program began in 1994. It's published by the Minnesota Department of Education State Library Services Office. And if you look through it, you'll see that libraries in communities all across the state have benefited from these grants. Although the required match is a dollar of local funding for every dollar of state funding, the reality, and you can see that in the chart on the front of this document, is that the local effort has been almost $7 of local funding for every dollar of state funding. So the local effort is really very substantial. While the bulk of these funds do come from cities and counties, volunteers often work to raise funds for their library by holding used book sales, bake sales, teas, and by soliciting contributions from local donors, as you just heard. In one community, children even collected pennies. And Representative Erickson, you may remember that because I think it was Malacca where they did that. Yeah. People just love their libraries, and yet often they cannot raise the amount that they need in order to keep them current without a little bit of help from the state, particularly in the smaller communities. We have a lot of older library buildings in Minnesota. 52% of our public library buildings were built in the 70s or earlier, and 25% were built in the 1940s or earlier. And as you can imagine, library service has changed dramatically since then. Many of these older buildings don't have adequate space for public access computers, for children's programming, for young adult study and research, and to accommodate new technology. The need to upgrade our libraries is still statewide. Our survey indicates that we can anticipate almost $150 million worth of library projects that would be applying for whatever amount ends up being passed in the 2016 bonding bill. I'm going to direct you to my second handout, which is in your packet. It's just a one-pager. But this is a list of likely applicants. And we have listed the regional public library system that the library belongs to, the name of the library, the estimated cost of the project, then what the state share would be if they were to get the maximum. So that is, again, 50% of the cost of the project, up to $1 million if it's a general renovation or a new construction, $200,000 if it's strictly accessibility. And then a brief description of the project, whether it's a new building or an addition or whatever. Often in the past, we have had testimony from communities that had previously received a grant or those that were hoping to apply for a grant, and we decided to keep it simple today and not bring in extra testifiers, but I do want to call your attention to a letter that's in your packet from the director of the Ely Public Library. It looks like this. And Ely received a grant to help build a new library in 2014. And if you look carefully at the letter, I just want to make sure there's no confusion. This director refers to it as the Library Accessibility and Improvement Grant Program. That is what it was called until the 2014 bonding bill when we decided to simplify and change it to library construction grants. But it is the same grant program. The letter describes what this grant meant to that community, and I want to pull out a few highlights about how library service has improved because of the new building. The new building is fully accessible for people with disabilities. The old building was not. The old library was housed in five separate rooms in a larger building, which made it very difficult for the staff to monitor what was going on in each of those rooms. The new library is specifically designed so that one staff person, if necessary, can monitor the entire library. The new library is so much more energy efficient that the total heating bill for all of 2015 was equal to what they used to pay for just 3 weeks in the winter. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And as a result, the savings in heat alone are enough for the city to be able to cover the bond payments on the new project. So they were able to do this without raising any taxes. Yeah, which is pretty fantastic. The other thing is that people were so excited about the new library that when it came time to move the collection from the old library to the new library, they had more volunteers than they could use. They actually had to put volunteers on a waiting list because they weren't sure they would have jobs for everybody. So that's what this grant has meant to this community, and we've had other stories in the past from previous recipients. In closing, I want to emphasize that public libraries are not just a local resource. A library card from your local library enables you to borrow materials from almost any library in Minnesota. So when you're up at the cabin, or if you're down here during session and you live somewhere else, if you work someplace and live in another library jurisdiction, you can drop those books off and you can check them out and so forth, or other materials, books, I'm old-fashioned. Anyway, as a result, public libraries often serve people who live well beyond the borders of the cities and counties that fund those individual libraries. And that's why we think it's really appropriate for the state to be a partner with local communities to ensure that they have up-to-date facilities that can serve the education and information needs of Minnesotans. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Keefe. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I recall, well, no, I don't recall because it says it right in the bill. So the bond dollars go to the Department of Education. Then would you explain to us, Ms. Keefe, what the process is thereafter? Because I think it gets quite competitive, does it not?
Yes, it does. Madam Chair. And actually, Jen Nelson, our state librarian who administers that program, is here in case there are questions. And so I'll take a stab at it, but you may want to embellish a little bit. So, yes, the department does, put out notice that applications are open. They, I think, do, meetings and seminars and so forth, put out information so that interested libraries know what the application process entails. And I will give a shout out to the department. We used to have a lot of complaints that the application process was really onerous, that the application seemed to get longer every year. I think what happened was every time the review committee had a question that they wanted the staff to go back and get information on that wasn't included in the application, that information was then requested the next year in the application, and so it got longer and longer and longer. Since this new crew has come in, since this new site librarian has come in, they have really made a concerted effort to streamline that, to make it as easy as possible for libraries to apply, and that's been a really good thing. We've gotten very positive feedback on that. It is very competitive. You can imagine we're asking for $10 million. We were just preceded by one project where they were asking for 2.4. You know, we have worked for years to try to get a higher amount of funding into this grant stream so that nobody feels like they have to go to the legislature individually, but that this is the place where all the applications are funneled. We've been successful sometimes and not other times. It would really help if we could have a larger amount of money in this pool, and then we'd be able to raise that cap beyond $1 million. Particularly in larger communities, $1 million isn't really very much. And, for example, 2 years ago, this was funded at $2 million statewide. And so the bias tends to be in favor of smaller projects where it's worth their while to jump through the hoops to get the amount of money that they need. The really big projects, oftentimes, particularly in the metro area, they don't bother to apply because it's more a hassle than it's worth for the amount of money that they might get. I think if we were able to increase the funding and increase that cap, you'd see a very different story out there.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Keefe, it is a matching grant because locals have to provide either half of it or more, as I recall.
Ms. Keefe.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, that is correct. The maximum grant is 50% of the cost of the project, up to $1 million. And so often, I think that's why we have the figure, it's $6.83 of local funding, actually, for every dollar of state funding that has gone into this program.
Other questions? Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this actually kind of piggybacks off of the bill we had before us previously, because I noticed on the list one of the possible applicants is the Cambridge Library that we just heard the bonding bill request for. So I'm curious if one or the other bill passed, how the funding would interact. If, say, the previous bill passed, would Cambridge not be considered for a grant, or you know, like, how would that interact, because both bills potentially could fund that project?
Okay, now, Madam Chair,
you may phone a friend.
I think I know the answer, but I think it's better if I phone a friend here and ask our state librarian to come down and answer that.
All right, well, welcome, and before you provide an answer to that, if you would please just introduce yourself for the record.
Certainly. Thank you, Representative. My name is Jennifer Nelson. I'm the Director of State Library Services at the Department of Education. One of the roles that my division has is to administer the Library Construction Grant Program. I believe the question, I'll restate it to make sure I understood you, is what would the intersection be if the Library Construction Grant proposal for $10 million was funded simultaneously with a $2.4 million request for the City of Cambridge? So I guess I would respond in a couple of different ways. We do run it is a competitive grant program, and we don't require, we don't have a limitation necessarily on the number of grant applicants or grant awards that we make to an individual entity. I guess I would call your attention to the bill for the City of Cambridge. There is a statutory limit of $1 million for the Library Construction Grant Program. So as I read that bill, I'm a little I'm not sure how we would, that we actually have the authority to issue a $2.4 million grant to the City of Cambridge for that particular project. If, as Elaine, Ms. Keefe mentioned, if there is a larger maximum on the grant award, of course, that would become a different question. I think as we administer the program, we do use for the competitive side. So if it was an earmark for the City of Cambridge that we, you know, take through the process with Minnesota Management and Budget, if it, the City of Cambridge were to apply as a competitive grant in that stream, we do use external reviewers from the library community to review and score grants and make our decisions on funding based on the scores. So there would be a couple of layers there. The city's project would have to rise to a level of quality for the reviewers. They would have to recommend it and that sort of thing. So it's, I guess I would say it's clear at the moment, but there are a couple of different issues that would need to be resolved before we would be able to grant $3 million or $3.4 million to the City of Cambridge, potentially.
Representative Wells.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That helps clear it up a little bit. So I guess if I'm understanding it correctly, they could potentially get money from both sources if they were able to get the funding through the bonding bill, and then also if they were to put in an application, but they would only be able to get up to the $1 million cap for the grant. So I just find it interesting to see them coming for and potentially requesting from multiple sources, and you know that's what you have to do to get your projects covered. So it gives us something to think about as we're considering, you know, which bills we would pass, and certainly if we were to pass the prior bill, that would be guaranteed funding for them, and if we pass this bill, they may or may not get funding because of the competitive nature. So, I mean, I would advocate for passing both because, you know, it's a project in Cambridge that seems very necessary, but also the grants, I think, is a great approach to be, funding projects across the state. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Other questions? All right. I'm not seeing any. So, thank you, Ms. Nelson, for coming down. Any final comments, Representative Howe?
No. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee for allowing us to come here and present. I tell you what, I truly believe it's a worthy cause, and with 356 libraries throughout the state, I think it's well needed. So, thank you.
Very good. I would agree. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2353 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment, but my intention today is to lay it over. And, okay. We were going to go with Representative Pearson, but I think he stepped out of the room. So, Representative Antles, do you want to go ahead and present your bill, and then as soon as Representative Pearson gets back, we'll get him on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And special thanks for including this legislation for hearing today. Members, the Miles Rife Center for the Performing Arts is located in Grand Rapids, adjacent to Grand Rapids Senior High School. The Rife Center for the Performing Arts has been in existence for about a little over four decades. It's named after an executive with the Blandin Paper Mill. And it has been the focal point for performing arts, music, speech, and other cultural activities and shows in our region for, as I said, over four decades. I oftentimes say that Northern Minnesota is known, of course, for the ways in which we make a living, which is primarily forestry and mining, but somehow along the line the immigrants spent time and energy respecting culture and art, and it's really one of the unique parts of Northern Minnesota, and I think it has something to do with the ethnic melting pot that it is. Anyway, enough of that. In 2014, the legislature responded to a request by the Rife Center Board and the school district for a major retrofit upgrade to the facility, which was very, very much needed. And the legislature responded with a bonding appropriation of about $3.8 million. In addition to that, the community, in my history there, is an unprecedented community-wide fundraising efforts raised about $2.3 million from everything from the typical bake sales to spaghetti feeds and other kinds of activities by community volunteers, and it's amazing how much money they really did raise. Well, the problem, now we get to the problem and the reason why I'm here, is we are short. And I'm requesting, in addition to some more spaghetti and meatball dinners, I'm requesting that the state provide an additional $500,000 so that we can complete this project, get it over the finish line, reopen it for the thousands of people, especially young people, who use that facility. All of the school districts in the region hold regional competitions and events there. It really is the epicenter for the arts in northern Minnesota. Specifically, what our $500,000 request will buy are things like flooring for the theater stage, retractable seating in the studio theater, lobby lighting fixtures, a concession and catering opportunity in the lobby, backstage laundry and costume equipment, building signage, lighting equipment, really the nuts and bolts of what's necessary to reopen the Rife Center is what this request is about. And that's it. My community and I respectfully ask you for your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Antels. Any questions? You left them speechless.
Madam Chair, I'm stunned, but very happy.
Representative Preece has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Antels. More just because I like to hear the local story. So how many students does this serve, and tell me a little bit about the impact to the area.
Representative Antels.
Thank you for asking that question. In 2011, over 37,000 school children, grades K-12, used this facility for one activity or another. In many cases, some of the same students used the facility more than once. And in addition to that, this is our Fordway. This is our venue for concerts and community symphony and community theater. I can get you some more actual numbers if you'd like, Representative Grisha, but I can assure you that this facility, when it reopens, will be fully utilized by the citizens.
Representative Grisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. So when you say it reopens, so right now it's not open.
Correct.
And you need this to reopen it.
Correct.
And the last thing is, and Representative Murphy, with your comment about the CD, I'm wondering if this isn't an opportunity for you and I to make a tour around the state to visit all these nice performing centers and put that CD together that you've been talking about. I'll drive.
I'd be willing if we stop at Culver's or ice cream along the way.
Deal.
I said, strike a bargain. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair. He named almost everything that takes place at the Rife Center, and it everything can be under the cultural and art. But my first experience in the introduction to the Rife Center was when I was invited to come there and see dance troupe. that came from the inner city of metropolitan Minnesota that came out to the Rice Center and over a period of weeks worked with the kids from the local area, and then the culminated in the final performance of all of them working together on the same thing. And I was just amazed that with the number of hours that they had and how much additional time they practiced on their own in the intermediate weeks, and then the final performance was just fantastic. And I'd never seen anything with that much enthusiasm and grace and beauty as at the final performance of the Rife Center. This told the local people, this is all of us. And it had its statewide impact because of where the children were coming from and working together with the local kids.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Other questions? And so, Representative Ansel's just, and so the new building is under construction now? Okay. So you're kind of mostly done, but not quite done.
Madam Chair, yes, we are under construction. We're just about to the finish line. We're feverishly raising money in the community, and with this help from the state of Minnesota, we can reopen soon. And the grace and the beauty will continue in northern Minnesota.
Oh. And I'm going to ask a question for Representative Carisha. He's wondering if you can, will the center be able to open without this money?
That's a good question. Madam Chair and Representative Carisha, eventually, ultimately, the center will open. But this help by the state of Minnesota will get us opened much, much sooner, believe me, and will be appreciated by the citizenry.
Thank you. And, Representative Wills has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Murphy sparked something when she mentioned that this is an arts and cultural heritage type project, and it made me wonder if it's possible for legacy funds to cover this or not, and if you've pursued that route at all.
Representative Ansel.
Madam Chair and Representative Wills, to my knowledge, there are no legacy funds in this project. This is a performing arts center, and I don't know that funding stream is appropriate for this, but so the answer is no. And I honestly cannot tell you for sure that the Rife Center Board of Directors did not approach that. They have approached everybody, I can assure you, and if they've left any stone unturned, it would be surprising to me.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for that, Representative Ansels. And I would just encourage you to check and see. I'm not even sure if it would qualify or not, but it might be something to
thank you for the suggestion.
Other questions? Comments? I don't see any. So with that, Representative Ansels, I'm sorry, I need my glasses for this, moves that House File 2454 be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment. The Chair's intention today is to lay it over. And thank you very much, Representative Ansels.
And thank you very much, Madam Chair, for your consideration.
Thank you. All right, Representative Pierce. Please come on up. And if your testifiers are with you, they can come along as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And let's see, I will move your bill to get it before us. I would move that House File 2864 be re-referred to the Committee on Capital Investment, but the Chair's intention today is to lay it over. And with that, we have it before us. So, Representative Pearson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I am Representative Nels Pearson, and today I have with me Cindy Russell, the Executive Director of the Reading Center in Rochester, and Jane Hagedorn, Director of Reading Readiness. I know several of you sit on the Education Innovation Committee with me, and dyslexia and reading issues are something we've been discussing a fair amount in that committee. I've had the good fortune to learn a lot about the issue. And then I recently actually had a friend of mine who confided in me that her son has dyslexia. And it was something, again, that came up in committees that I found quite, just interesting and unique. It's an issue that can strike anyone. We understand now that there's approximately 1 in 5 who have that issue. And then beyond that, the interesting thing is, again, my friend just happens to be a Harvard Law School graduate and is literally married to a rocket scientist, and their son has dyslexia. And it was something for them, I think, when they found out, it was such a question of what do we do? How did this happen? Where do we go from here? And I really think that the specific regional interest that we have happens to be right in the city of Rochester is such an asset, not only for the city of Rochester, Olmsted County. You've got a map that's been handed out to you that shows some broad reach of the students that have been touched by this facility. But we're going to demonstrate even further of how that reach is growing and expanding, even beyond our state's borders at this point. So with that, I'm going to ask Cindy to actually take over and give you guys a quick synopsis of what the request is.
All right. Welcome to the committee. And if you would please just state your name for the record before you begin your remarks. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Cindy Russell. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm the Executive Director of the Reading Center. Our other name is the Dyslexia Institute of Minnesota. We are a venerated educational nonprofit that has helped nearly 9,000 students and trained 1,700 teachers and other adults over our 65-year history. Our mission is to teach kids and adults with dyslexia to read. Dyslexia is neurobiological in origin, yet it has an educational solution. And as Representative Pearson mentioned, approximately 1 in 5 individuals have some level of dyslexia. So this condition has a significant part to play in literacy rates, affecting 3 to 5 students in each classroom in Minnesota, and being equal opportunity, it can happen to anyone. It contributes to the achievement gap when unremediated. You probably know someone with dyslexia, and you certainly have many constituents with dyslexia in your districts. You may have been contacted by members of Decoding Dyslexia Minnesota, the parent advocacy group, and you will hear about more from them on Dyslexia Day, April 5th. We applaud their work on behalf of students with dyslexia. The Reading Center is located in Rochester for 65 years, but it does have a statewide reach, and that reach is growing thanks to technology. I'm testifying today about the House File 2864, which is a bonding bill to provide the Reading Center with funds to help us build a facility that will enable us to expand our capacity through our partner, Olmsted County. Our current facility is 3,000 square feet, a former auto shop that we grew out of over a decade ago. We have 3 tutoring spaces for our 43 highly trained tutors and 1 meeting room that must double for training and classrooms. So tutors end up meeting with their students in their own homes, in libraries, other public places, inefficiently spending their time traveling place to place, while we have students who languish on a waiting list. Key staff office wherever they can, very literally in stairwells, in a library room we have, or they just move around. And our highly regarded accredited trainings and classes must occur in borrowed spaces. Our architectural study indicates that we need a 12,000 square foot facility to house our current services and to expand our tutoring and training to meet the need. This facility will cost $3 million. Our request is for $1.5 million in state capital investment funds, and we will match that $1.5 million with privately raised funds. Dyslexia is an issue affecting so many and such an elemental skill as literacy, yet dyslexia is drastically underfunded, especially in light of the success rates of students who receive appropriate help. Reading Center is asking for one-time funding to help our organization build a facility so that we may serve more students in need. So I am requesting that the committee favorably recommend this proposal to the Capital Bonding Committee. And I would like to have my colleague Jan Agadorn say a few words too.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Russell. Welcome.
Madam Chairman and committee members, we thought it would be helpful for you to understand why we think the Reading Center is something that affects people throughout the state. This is not just a regional issue.
And I'm sorry, would you please just state your name for the record as
I'm
well?
I'm Jan Hagedorn.
Thank you.
I'm the Director of Reading Readiness, and I do a number of other things at the center. But I thought I should describe some of our services because I think they're unique for what we do, and they're sort of far-reaching. We provide affordable diagnostic testing for families that have a need for educational testing to determine if they have dyslexia. Our rates are considerably lower than any place in the state, and we also provide scholarships for people that have a need-based need. We specialize in one-to-one tutoring. We have classes for youth. We've found ways to provide services more efficiently with youth in groups. But we also train teachers and other adults that want to learn how to provide the specific kind of teaching that helps dyslexic kids. And I can go into that later if you're interested, but we're a not-for-profit. We've been in existence for 65 years. 26% of our students are receiving scholarships from funds that we raise. But we also train district teachers in public schools on how they can use the approach that we have found to be so effective for helping dyslexic children in their classrooms as a way to minimize the number of students that actually have to have tutoring on a one-to-one basis. We do not sell a curriculum. We're not selling a product. We are not trying to get them to buy books. We are providing training and knowledge that teachers can apply in their classroom for whatever curriculum their school has chosen to use. This is a supplement to traditional teaching. It's not in replacing it. We've also started a community partnership to try to reach out to people that have not been able to get to us in the past, for children and adults. So we have started giving our intensive training to volunteers that are already committed to organizations of students of need, whether that's the Boys and Girls Club, the adult detention centers in Olmsted County, people that are volunteering to work in chemical treatment programs. We also have a connection that's pretty intense with the Rochester Public School Adult Literacy as a Second Language program. And what we're looking for is for the kids and adults that are not responding to the traditional education literacy methods. They refer them to us, and we then are able to show and demonstrate ways that you can reach some of those people.
So when this all came up to us, we were already in the middle of setting up a capital campaign to try to get a bigger building. We literally cannot teach as many people that want to learn how to help kids that because we're limited by literally how many seats we have in the room or how many spaces we can find. We now have started, technology has caught up. We're developing programs so we can do some outreach online. That's something that 5 years ago didn't really exist. So we know we need to grow if we're going to be able to continue to meet the demands of what people need. And we just literally can't do it anymore in the space that we have. Now, one little caveat, in our teacher infusion program where we've gone in and taught the teachers the skills that we use for dyslexic students so they can apply it in their classroom. In the test scores of the students that have been in those classrooms, we have been able to have 9% more of those kids are reading at grade level than comparable classrooms for teachers that haven't been in that program. So we literally are raising the bottom. We're not in 1 year making the gap go away, but we know that if we can have out of the classroom, if you can make a 9% increase in the rate of growth for the kids, if we could have that year after year after year, we think it could make some good contributions. So I got a little wordy, I'm sorry, but I'll stop now.
Thank you, Ms. Hagedorn. We appreciate it, both you and Ms. Russell being here. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill forward to help with a problem that we're identifying as a growing need. I just had a couple of questions. It's wonderful. Thank you for the map, you know, showing the reach you have in Minnesota. I was just wondering if you have any rough estimates as to the percentage of, you know, students and or teachers that you serve within Olmsted County versus your statewide reach. I just wanted to get a feel for that.
There's no question. Right now, our...
That's fine, Ms. Hagedorn. I was swallowing water, so go ahead.
Even though we have been working this hard in Olmsted County, we're still only reaching less than 10% of the people that are probably dyslexic in Olmsted County. Mm-hmm. And that's why we've decided we need to do something on a broader scale to get into the school trainings so that we can help more kids. This is across the state. This is not something that's community centric. No, this is something that in every community, this is the same problem. And we're just trying to be part of the solution.
Madam Chair, may I also just partially answer that in that services available for people affected by dyslexia are so rare that you see from that map, people will travel to us from a long ways away because this is where they can get help. But our technology allows us to do some tutoring with kids from afar as well.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, and thank you for that explanation. I guess I'd also like to know if you just know roughly of your current clientele, what percentage are from, you know, your area, which would, of course, be a larger number, but what percent, roughly, that you serve in greater Minnesota? I'm just trying to get a reach.
I see what you're saying.
Ms. Hagedorn.
Yes, thank you. We just, in the last 2 years, is when we've started doing online tutoring, and we right now have probably 20, 25 students that we're tutoring individually. Our training, though, for teacher training is from all over the state. We have teachers that come not only from Minnesota, but we have people that come from around the world to train with us. We have several people that come from Canada in the last 3 or 4 years for our intensive training. So I would say probably our state reach is much broader on the end of the teachers that we train or adults that are coming to learn how to do what we do. than it is directly one-on-one with the kids.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that answer. And this is really exciting because it is such a problem. I'm just wondering if you could detail a little bit more what your plans for expansion are with the $3 million. Are you going to concentrate more on the teacher training? Or just, you know, if you could just...
Ms. Russell. Yes, Madam Chair. We have a three-year plan to increase the number of students that we're reaching by 56%. We are in the process of bringing our training for adults so that they can learn this approach online, and this is going to make it so much more accessible so that people don't have to come and spend 3 weeks in Rochester, although it's a great place to be. They don't have to do that. They can still be living their lives and taking care of their kids and taking that coursework online so that they can then turn around and help the kids in their communities as well.
Representative Seltzer.
My last question. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, I'm wandering a little bit from bonding, but I am a former teacher. I just wondered, how long does the training take, or how many hours are involved for the training?
Yes, Ms. Russell. Madam Chair. The training for our basic training takes 120 hours. So if you came in the summer for our face-to-face training, you would be spending 3 weeks, 8 hours a day with homework. Don't plan on going to Little League games and things because you will be busy at night doing homework. And that includes an intensive practicum where you're working with a student who has dyslexia.
Now,
Ms. Hagedorn.
But that's not the end of the training. That's our first level of training. That's called our basic training. For people that need to work with older students and work more with the more sophisticated language, the root suffixes and all the affixes, we have another training course, which is almost sort of a graduate-level course. These courses are actually graduate-level, college-level classes, and that is a two-week program, 8 hours a day. But we do not even allow people to take that training for the second level of the course until they've used the first basic training for a year. Because you have to, that's the part that I think is very frustrating about dyslexic training needs, is it's not like you can go take a seminar on a weekend and figure out how you're going to help kids. And I think everybody wants a quick answer for this, and it just doesn't have one, because it has to be education-based, doing what you're doing to teach kids to read in a different way, completely different way, than what normal kids learn to read. And by definition, they're dyslexic because they don't learn the way normal people read. So it does no good to put them in smaller groups to do the same kind of activities again that they're getting in the classroom. It has to be a different way. And for that, you have to have a lot of training to know how to do it well. The Reading Center's accredited by the Orton-Gillingham Association, or Academy. We're the only ones west of the Mississippi. There's several on the East Coast. But good training with practicums are rare. There's a lot of fly-by-night trainings that are making promises that they will say you've been trained, but it doesn't help the kids. You have to know how to use it and apply it for it to be helpful. And that's what we do.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your indulgence, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Huam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank the testifiers. This is an example of something that started before I was born, has helped and impacted generations of students. And by imparting the knowledge and skill to teachers, it leverages their capabilities to help so many children. And it's designed for dyslexia, but I think it also helps other students that have difficulty in literacy and learning. And the smile, you know, seeing the kid's face when they get it, and the frustration melts away, and that achievement is priceless. But think about the employment gap that we've got and all the students, if they had the literacy, they remove a barrier. And that the lack of literacy is such a barrier to employment. So with the updates, with the technology we now have to where we can do it over the line, distance learning, this not only has helped a great part of the state, but will help more of the state. And this is a successful program that I think bodes well for our future if we invest in it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the Director, you're looking at a not insignificant capital campaign to raise the $1.5 million and to have targeted a 56% increase in student contact. How do you fund that, the operational cost? I mean, the capital I get, you ask people for money. The operational is a little more involved.
Right, Madam Chair. We actually have worked out a 3-year operating budget with that 56% increase in students in mind. Our regular operating funds are about 2/3 fee-for-service, 1/3 charitable donations. We have 65 years worth of alumni in Rochester and across the state, and we have many strong supporters who understand the value of what we provide. I'm not making light of the fundraising effort that is required, but we've built that and to continue to increase the number of students that we assist is all being worked into that operating budget. So we have made plans for that.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have commitments already for the capital campaign or for the increased giving for the operations?
Madam Chair, we are at the very, very beginning stages of the capital campaign. We've undergone a feasibility study, the experts feel that we have the capacity to raise that in addition to some funds that we will be applying to increasing our capacity as well.
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifiers, to the Director, what age group or does dyslexia really recognized right away in schools? What age groups, and then what age groups do you actually see in your facility?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, it's a tricky question. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that we test for dyslexia at the end of first grade. However, children between the age of 4 and 6, we have standardized screening materials that we can identify kids who are likely to develop problems with reading. And these aren't things we came up with. These are national tests. I would say the bubble of kids that come to the Reading Center are often around 3rd to 5th grade, because if they have been able to fake it in school, they have until they can't fake it anymore. For some kids, they're a little older when they can't fake it anymore. The pictures get taken away from the books, or the reading load gets so heavy. So that is when we see our bubble.
Madam Chair, and just a follow-up, can you think of any school districts in the state that have really addressed this situation and that have outstanding programs? Can you think of any schools that we have that have really addressed it?
Madam Russell?
Dyslexia is an issue that all school districts really need to get better at because of the high number of students who are dyslexic, but this is a, we're at really a beginning point in that, especially when you consider parent advocacy groups like Decoding Dyslexia, because you'll recall that last legislative year, you all passed a law allowing dyslexia to be used, the word dyslexia to be used in the schools. Before that had not happened. So we have a long ways to go. Rochester has, for the past 8 years, we have been providing training to cohorts of teachers in Rochester. Rochester still has a ways to go as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Detmer, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Great questions. Mine have been pretty well answered. I would just add that your program sounds outstanding, and I think we can all tell your passion for what you do. So thank you, and just keep it up. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Frisia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have to follow the cheerleader?
Wow.
Thank you, Representative Pearson, for bringing this up in the test phase. I just wanted to briefly mention, if you weren't aware about it, House File 2695 is also being carried by Linda Runbeck, Representative Runbeck, and you might be familiar with the legislation. But I noticed her legislation is seeking some financing, and Representative Seltzer's on it, doesn't mention your program in that. So it might, I don't know if there's a conflict, or, but it might be worth talking to them about, because there's some coordination. But good luck with the efforts, because it's very important.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the author for presenting this bill and for our testifiers. I just want to thank you for the work you do, and you know, as a former Albert Lee teacher, I wish I had known about your organization, because I would have been over there taking some of those classes. So thank you. I'm excited about this bill.
Thank you. Other questions? All right. Seeing none, Representative Pearson, any final thoughts for the committee?
Well, first of all, again, thank you to the committee and Madam Chair for hearing our presentation on the bill. You know, the only final thought I would have is again, in education innovation the other day, listening to the testimony of a young lady who had not been diagnosed until she was 23 years of age. And just imagining the frustration and the hardship that probably created for her, the insecurity that all of us have anyway, but then to really not know why you're struggling, it must have been just overwhelming. So just having something like this and hopefully helping out a lot of kids throughout the state of Minnesota, I just really am proud to be able to author this bill.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Pearson, and to Ms. Russell and Ms. Hagedorn, thank you very much for your very informative testimony. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2864 be re-referred to capital investment, but today my intention is to lay it over. And thank you all so much. And I did not see Representative Sundin. No. So we have completed the list of bills on our agenda for today then. So thank you, committee members. We have a long weekend coming up from legislative business, so I wish you all a good weekend. See you next week. Committee is adjourned.